Welcome to Non-Native, the podcast that shares conversations between immigrants, expats, and interlopers. My name is Sarah, and in November 2014, I up sticks from Bristol in the United Kingdom to move to the west coast of the United States. Moving meant leaving behind friends, family, and the country I'd lived in my whole life for the promise of new experiences, meeting new people, and adapting to a new culture. In Non-Native, I speak with women who have moved around the world in pursuit of love, work, happiness, or adventure. Hello, and welcome back to Non-Native, the podcast that shares conversations between female immigrants, expats, and interlopers. For this episode, the final installment of the season, I was joined by Alex, a journalist who moved to the south of France in 2019 in search of great food, country living, and a slice of the good life. Alex and her husband are both Irish, but had been living in London prior to their move. We chatted last month while she was staying with her family in Belfast and putting the finishing touches to her memoir, The Troubles With Us, which will be published in spring next year. We discussed what it's like to give birth in a different country, how Brexit played a part in Alex's decision to move abroad, what it's like adapting to a slower pace of life, and the importance of attempting, if not mastering, speaking French. Thank you to Alex for joining me and to everyone who has listened to this season of Non-Native. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to your podcasts to help more people find it and to be first in line to listen when season 4 returns later this year. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Sarah.
Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So, Alex, you are currently chatting to me from your parents' house in Belfast, but your actual home is Toulouse, France. So how did you end up back in Belfast?
So we came back home at the end of February to stay with my parents for a couple of weeks. I'm writing a book, a memoir about growing up in Belfast in the 1990s. And I thought it would be good to be back in Belfast and get myself in that mindset again. And also get help with childcare, which is very important when writing a book. And then we went into lockdown 2 weeks later. So we've been here for 4 months now. and we were due to go home three times. We had three flights booked and they were cancelled each time. So about a week before we were due to go home, we got an email from Aer Lingus saying, sorry, not going back to Toulouse now. So we are on a repatriation flight, we hope, with Air France on Thursday, going via Paris to Toulouse. So it'll be quite a mission because we've got two little boys and we'll be going with them, trying to make them not touch anything in the airports.
Oh, yikes.
So yeah, it's been an interesting couple of months because we only moved out a year ago. So we were just starting to get settled into our French life when this happened. But yeah, it's been, we were very lucky. We feel very grateful to have had the help from my parents. I know a lot of people with young kids weren't in the same position to have had childcare these past few months, and they have a lovely garden the kids could play in. So we've been very lucky.
So you mentioned you moved, was it a year ago to France?
February 2019. Yeah, so it was a year and a half ago now.
A year and a half ago. And what was the impetus for moving? Because you moved from London, not from Belfast, right?
That's right. We were in London 12 years, had a fantastic time there. We were in our 20s and just loving life and our jobs and the single life. And this was all pre-kids. But we always talked about moving to France someday. We would go on holidays there a lot, and just over rosé-fueled lunches, we'd go, well, isn't this a great idea? We should do this someday. And we were staying in a place in Aix-en-Provence a couple of years ago in this gorgeous guest house, and the owners just seemed to have a really charmed existence and swim in the pools after they gave everyone breakfast in the mornings, and it was just the good life. And we thought, well, we should do this, we should buy a dilapidated property in France and do it up and run a B&B. And then we came home, sobered up, and decided that's not a great idea. We know nothing about the hospitality industry, so we'll stay put. And then a few years later, we had our son, who's now 2.5. We knew we wanted to have more kids and to give them the kind of life that we had growing up in Ireland. So it was a bit of space. We had a lot of time with our parents. We had access to nature. We knew we couldn't afford to do that in London. And we just wanted to have a less stressed way of life, just with more time with the family, eating good food, cheap wine, no commute. I just thought, yeah, let's give it a shot. But we were really lucky in that my husband had been working with the same company for 10 years. He was offered a job in Amsterdam, and we considered that, but we just thought it's another city and we wanted something completely different. So luckily his company let him relocate to France, and he works from home now, but he goes back to London a few days a week. Well, he did until coronavirus hit, and then I work from home anyway. So we're both still able to do our existing jobs in France, which is pretty important, because I don't think we'd be able to survive just on doing the B&B yet. Maybe down the line we'll consider that.
That does sound like a very fantastical, good life-esque dream that you had. And so I first came across Alex's work in Red Magazine. You wrote a column about moving to France, looking for the good life, French parenting, that kind of thing. So I'm curious to know kind of what you thought when you landed in Toulouse. I know you don't have the B&B up and running just yet, but I think that's what you were aiming for. So what was it first like when you moved? Was it a culture shock? Was it like a bump down to earth, or was it the good life straight away?
It definitely was not. So I was 6 weeks pregnant with the number two when we went. I had a toddler who was just entering that awful phase that toddlers do. I was feeling really sick all the time. The weather was awful because we moved in the 1st of February and there were hailstones. Oh, and then the Gilets Jaunes were out in full force, smashing up banks and protesting most weekends. So we couldn't go into town. So I thought, what have we done? This is crazy. And then we settled into it a bit more. So after I stopped feeling so sick, we made some lovely friends. We got to explore the city, which is really beautiful. Toulouse is, it's called the Rose City because all the buildings, it's beautiful, sort of pinky red facade. And it's a great way of life. There's lovely restaurants. But yeah, it was a culture shock. I think that the most difficult thing when we first arrived was getting set up with healthcare. So getting something called the carte vitale. And once you have this, you're in. It's like the gold card. And that's sort of your social security number and all of your access to healthcare, which is brilliant in France, but it's really hard getting onto the system. And things were just made tricky for me because I am self-employed. For some reason, they can't seem to handle that and they couldn't place me in the system. So we had to pay for all of my prenatal appointments up front, which was a lot of money. It was very difficult. There were a lot of doctor's appointments that I had to navigate in French, and I barely had any of the language at this stage. So it was very intense. And then obviously I gave birth in France, which was a completely different experience.
What was that like compared to the UK and the NHS?
I enjoyed this experience much more. So second time around, it was a lot easier probably, but it was because it was my second baby. But also there seemed to be less judgment. I had an epidural this time around. I had a natural birth first time. I remember my consultant, when I told him I was considering an epidural, he was like, well, absolutely, like 93% of French women have epidurals. Like, why wouldn't you? You know, we think you English and Irish people are masochists. And I like that. It's just very, I think there's a lot less judgment around motherhood and parenting in France. And the French are really proud of the fact that 70 or 80% of women are back at work, you know, within 6 months of having a baby. That's really important to them. And so that's why the state childcare is so good, because they want to encourage women back into work. So this time around, the experience felt a lot more empowering. And that's not to say that I wasn't looked after extremely well by the NHS with my first child, but I, on a personal level, I just felt that this was a better experience. And plus you're in hospital for 3 days.
And the language barrier wasn't too challenging in the birthing suite?
I think it's a sort of universal, I think everyone knows what they're saying. You know what they're saying with push. I think it's, I'm trying to remember what they say push. Is it something, the word for strong? I can't remember. But yeah, I mean, you don't need to use too many words. I think that everyone understands where you're coming from. No, it was fine. I actually had to go into hospital on my own because the woman who looks after our son, she was away on holiday. The French go off on holiday for a month or two. And she told us, I think, a few weeks before she was going on holiday, oh, I won't be here for the summer. And I went into labor, luckily, the day before she was due to come back, but I had to go to hospital for myself. And then my husband arrived at 9 a.m. As soon as she arrived, she came straight from the train station to pick up the baby, and then he dashed to the hospital. So he was there for the last 2 hours before I gave birth, but I had to go in on my own. But it was fine. Second time around, it wasn't too bad. But yeah, there was a lot going on.
I guess you know a bit more what you're doing the second time around.
Exactly. And then 2 weeks after the baby arrived, we moved to Albi, which is a town about an hour's drive from Toulouse. And we bought a house there and then decided to renovate it straight away.
Oh, wow.
So it was a lot. We packed a lot in. It was very full on.
You're not doing things by halves, juggling a newborn, a toddler and a house renovation in French.
Yeah. If I did it again, I wouldn't do it all at once. But and I really don't know how we got through that year, but we did. And I'm looking forward to getting back, and then the French adventure can really begin properly.
Is there anything that you missed during that first year, either from your time in London or from Belfast?
So, I mean, family and friends goes without saying, but ironically, what I missed most was what I love most about France, and that's the food. So we have, there's so many great markets on your doorstep. The French are big into their markets, and a lot of people still buy most of their groceries in markets as opposed to supermarkets. And I love that you can walk out your door and just see what's in season. You know, there's seps and peaches and the smell of asparagus, and it's such an incredible experience. And you can get all that in London, but it's really pricey. And I think shopping and groceries and eating well in France is a much more democratic experience. So everyone was able to afford really good food and the best of produce. So I love that. We ate really well, but it's really hard to get decent vegetarian food. And I eat veggie about 4 days a week. They're big into their meat in the region that we're in. And coffee as well. French coffee is really bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And a lot of people are surprised by that because it's a cafe culture. But I read it's something to do with the beans. So historically, the French used to get all their beans from their colonies because it was duty free. So it meant that buying beans elsewhere in the world was really expensive. And the beans, it was a really cheap kind of bean. It was very coarse and bitter, and it wasn't Arabica. And I think now they've just developed a taste for that. So the French like their coffee really bitter and strong. And I think it's something like 50% of coffee in France is still this cheaper type of bean. So yeah, so it's really hard to get decent third wave coffee places, like to go and get your flat whites. And there were three in Toulouse that I managed to hunt down that did good coffee. And there's none in the town that we're in now. So we had to go buy ourselves a fancy coffee machine. So it's fine. Crisis averted.
And you mentioned food there, some of the challenges, but also I'm sure that's one of the impetuses for moving to France. What are some of the things that you love about living in France?
Food is number one. The scenery is beautiful. I mean, it's gorgeous. We've got on our doorstep the most beautiful villages, gorgeous, picturesque, beautifully preserved medieval places and in fantastic countryside. And it's all within sort of a half an hour, 40 minute drive from us. It's very laid back, and the French are really all about pleasure and enjoying life and taking time to have lunch and not just scoffing a sandwich at your desk, and spending time with family. So it's a much slower pace of life, especially in Occitanie, where we are. And they really value family time and just relaxing and not doing much, which is great. So it's a lovely place to live, but it does take some getting used to.
It sounds like a nice work-life balance, though.
It is. It really is. It's, I guess the hardest thing is when you live in London, you're used to things happening quickly, and you're used to be able to getting whatever you want straight away. You know, at a click of a button, you can get takeaway, or you know, your dry cleaning done last minute, and everything is just a much more slower process. On Sundays, you won't find any shops open. The supermarkets aren't even open. They have a lot more public holidays than we have back in the UK. They take a 2 hour lunch typically.
God, that sounds lovely.
Yeah, there's no, you know, if you want to speak to somebody in office, there's, you know, you won't get people staying sort of beyond 5 or 6. So they do take their holidays very seriously. They're sacred, which is a good thing, but it's also a bit frustrating if you want to get stuff done. But I've gotten into the swing of it now, just about.
And so in terms of moving, we chatted about this a little bit before we started recording, but I know Brexit was kind of a motivator as well as searching for the good life. And you yourself have interviewed people who have moved because of political events in the UK in the last few years. I was just wondering if you could chat a bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's Brexit was definitely part of our decision. I mean, it wasn't the main reason we moved, but around about the time of the referendum, just atmosphere in London changed. You know, everything was so divisive and polarized, and I just thought it was so sad, the idea of leaving the EU. I mean, I have no problem saying I'm a proud European, and I was part of a generation who has never known a time outside the EU. So I've always taken the ability to work and travel and study freely in the continent for granted. And I think it's really sad that there's going to be a whole generation of young people who won't have those same opportunities. And we, you know, luckily I've got my husband and I are both Irish. We've got Irish passports. Our sons have Irish passports. So this wouldn't, you know, Brexit wouldn't have affected our decision. But if, you know, friends of ours, if they wanted to do the same thing we did after Brexit, I think they'll find it very difficult to just, you know, you can't just up and move to France. Those opportunities aren't as widely available anymore. And I think that's such a shame.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I have a friend, she was a former guest on this podcast as well, who moved to Berlin, and she's been there, gosh, she's probably been there for about 7 or 8 years now. And she had to make the decision to apply to be a German citizen to ensure that she would be able to stay in the city because there was so much confusion and worry over what Brexit would mean.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is it. And it's going to affect so many people. And the people I interviewed as well, they all felt the same. They were living all around Europe. And a lot of them said they'd never return to the UK because they just, you know, they some of them hated what their country had become, or others were just really frustrated that, you know, a decision had been made to limit their freedoms and, you know, their ambitions for the future. And it's a contentious issue, isn't it? And I obviously it's good that it hasn't been discussed so much recently. But I don't really know what's going to happen when things pick up again. We're out of lockdown.
That leads me on nicely to my next question, which is, what does the idea of migration or freedom to move mean to you?
I think it's so important. I think freedom of movement is crucial for a more tolerant, forward-thinking, open society. And if we don't have that, we risk becoming very inward-looking. And not to mention, we miss out on all of these people that can really contribute to society. I mean, what I find most interesting about these past few months, you know, when Boris Johnson, after his stint in intensive care, the two nurses that he thanked that said, you know, were his angels, they were foreign nationals, you know, the very people that the government, not to get too political, but I will, the very people that the government want to stop coming into the country, and that Brexit is going to, you know, mean that we don't have these wonderful people contributing to society. So I think it makes for a less rich, diverse, inclusive place to live. And I do worry, you know, what that's going to mean for modern Britain. Yeah, it's a scary time, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a really challenging time, and it's certainly the same here in the US. You know, right now we have a very conservative government, a very conservative leader who is very anti-immigration, anti-movement, and I think that's been clear to see even from the way that the recent protesters have been treated compared to protests by white people, essentially, that have sparked nowhere near the levels of outrage that these ones have, when these are ultimately much more important. And they don't just affect Black American citizens, they also affect Black and brown immigrants and populations that make both the US and Britain so diverse. So you've been living in France for a year now. What's it been like dealing with the language barrier and English versus French?
So we had some French when we kept it very basic. I'm talking barely GCSE level French when we came out, and it has got, I've got a very strange vocabulary now. I can talk about gynecological matters because I gave birth there, and very specific renovation work. So I have a very weird vocab. It's what I would say is that it's so important to learn French, and especially outside of Paris. So it's not like other places. I know that, say, if you go to Berlin, for example, everyone will just want to speak English to you. So it can be hard learning German. I have friends out there that say that. But in France, if you don't make an effort to learn French, life will be very difficult. You know, there's a perception that the French can be quite unwelcoming and friendly, and I don't think that's fair. I think that they just want you to make an effort. So they don't want you to go there and expect that everyone's going to speak in English to you. And even if it's really bad, they'll appreciate the effort made, which is frustrating for perfectionists like me, because I want to try and get everything grammatically correct before I try to speak to a French person. But I've learned that I just have to jump in, and it's definitely been easier. As my French improves, it's easier to connect with people and make friends, but it is very difficult at the start. So that's important. Just learn the language, or at least make an effort when speaking to your French person. And, you know, it can be tough to crack life in France, but it's really worth it. I mean, nothing's easy. It takes a long time to get your paperwork sorted. They require paperwork for everything. It's a really bureaucratic country, and it can be really frustrating when you go to post office to pick up a parcel and, I don't know, they want your wedding certificate. You know, they're all about the paperwork. But if you persevere, it's very rewarding. And, you know, when you do establish a friendship with a French person, it's great. You know, they're very loyal. So yeah, if you can persevere with it, it's a great experience.
That's wonderful. It certainly does sound like, you know, raising your children and renovating a house, it definitely does sound like the good life in the south of France.
Although I will say we've had four chickens, and yeah, we've lost four. Sadly. Yeah, so we were getting our renovations done when we moved in, and the gate was left open, a dog came in and killed two.
Oh dear.
And then we got them replaced, that was fine. And we got a call from our neighbour. So we had four chickens again. Then we got a call from our neighbour during lockdown, and she's been looking after them. It's very kind of her, but obviously we've been away a lot longer than expected, and she decided she was going to clean out their coop. And her sister told her to use bleach, and two of them were poisoned, so we lost another two.
Oh gosh.
So she's gone out and replaced the two chickens so that my son wouldn't see. So it was very sweet of her. So we are coming back to four chickens again, but if anything else happens, maybe we're not cut out for that part of the good life.
That's a big difference from city living to country living, for sure.
It really is. Yeah. It's been a steep learning curve.
Fantastic. So Alex, if anybody wanted to follow you and your adventures in France, read more of your work, or find out more about your book, The Troubles With Us, where can they do that?
So I'm on Instagram at Alex O'Neill, and on Twitter with the same handle.
Fantastic. Okay, Alex, thank you so much for joining me. I hope you get back to France safely.
Fingers crossed.
And thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Non-Native. If you like what you heard, subscribe and rate us on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at ShipshapeBF, or over on my blog, shipshapeinbristolfashion.com.